Hello everyone, welcome to the inaugural episode of the Sat Upon a Toadstool Advice Column. I am currently whipping up a rose entourage as I watch the robins return from their long wintertide journey, and I hope you'll join me to answer some questions asked by you, the listeners. Before we begin, I just wanted to mention that I recently restocked a bunch of material over on the Kitchen Toad website, including a bunch of candles, oils, and powders, talismans of Hecate as well, and I've also released the Hecate Brimo altar bottles that I've been talking about for a really long time, along with the launch of our collection for the Fixstar Aldebaran, which I've been very excited about, so you can check those out over on the Kitchen Toad website. And you can also check out the Almanac episode that will be coming out with this episode over on Patreon, which is available, I believe, to all tiers, Leaf and Up. So that includes Leaf and Hawthorn, and that Almanac episode goes into the various celestial tidings that are happening in April, as well as the various feast days and celebrations and just general witchy things going on, as well as what I'm doing to celebrate and things that I recommend you do if you're interested in doing that. I try to talk a little bit about folklore and folk beliefs and celebrations and that because that's something that I'm very passionate about. So our first listener question today is from Crow, who asks, how can one let go of the socially normalized idea that all learning must be through books and formal methods, specifically in terms of letting go and embracing spirit-taught and spirit-led practices? I think this is a really, really good question, and it's one that I actually asked myself quite a lot in the first few years that I was practicing. And I think it really boils down to openness and respect and also finding out kind of what your cosmology is and how you perceive the world and your relationship with the world around you, including how you interact with spirits, how you interact with nature, and even just the people around you, you know. If we come at things from an animist kind of perspective, then everything has a spirit, which means that everything has its own will and its own existence and identity and habits, customs, beliefs, all of these things, right, which intrinsically make us people, apart from just being biologically human. And so when we kind of put all of that into perspective and do a lot of really good introspection, we can kind of figure out how to gain more agency and how to open ourselves up to what other things can teach us without it necessarily being dogmatic human teaching. What I mean when I say respect here is kind of developing that sense of respect for people that aren't necessarily us. Respect for the plant people and respect for the land and respect for the dead and all of these things, because from respect we can kind of, at least for me, my mind can kind of extrapolate from respect that I have lessons to learn from other spirits, and then I can kind of access a sense of humility towards them. I, as a human, don't really know anything from the get-go about the spirit world and about the numinous and what the others want and stuff like that, right? So I open myself up by trying to cultivate that sense of respect and of almost awe towards other spirits so that I can then take the steps to learn from them. I think the letting go process is what was most difficult for me when I was getting into all of this, because I think as witches, we are kind of always conflicted in this sense of, is what I'm doing pure batshit insanity? Like, am I losing my mind? Are these experiences that I'm having straight up me hallucinating, or is it mental illness, or, you know, is it just my mind playing tricks on me? Am I living in a fantasy, or am I deluded? Or, you know, all these questions kind of come up. And for me, that was kind of difficult, especially as like a teenager getting into things, because I feel like that's kind of when the conversation was really happening about mental illness, at least for my age group. I kind of realized that there's a huge past and a huge history of people practicing these things and doing these things and holding these beliefs. And for me, going from questioning myself to then trying to respect the lineage and the traditions that I am trying to bring into my life and that I'm trying to espouse is really what kind of cleared those ideas away from me. But then that created another issue, which is, how do I do things right? How do I make sure that what I'm doing is okay, that I'm not messing up, that I'm being respectful? And I think, unfortunately, we are operating in a sphere where, like, that's not always possible unless you have very, very clearly defined teachers and mentors and are, like, in a very, like, serious kind of, like, learning setting with either someone who practices magic or someone in an academic context that can guide you, anything like that, or within, like, a living tradition. You know, you don't really get the access to knowing if you're right. So you kind of just have to give up on being right, I guess. That's what I did. I don't know. At the end of the day, I think what my spirits want and what my spirits tell me to do is going to be the right thing. So I trust in what they're saying, and I trust in the communication skills that I have with them and that I'm developing still, because honestly, I'm not the perfect like seer, you know, I'm not always receiving like crazy strong messages, but when synchronicities kind of start lining up and I start putting two and two together, and then I do divination and it confirms that that's what I'm supposed to do or what they feel or something like that, I take that as 100%. So I go into things not questioning them. And I guess it's kind of blind faith-y is what I'm saying. But like at the end of the day, if you get results, it works. And if you don't get results, then you ask why. And then if there is not an answer to that, then you can let go of it. If there is an answer to that, then, you know, you kind of try and keep doing it until it works. You know, this is like self-led. This is self-motivated. So we're going to have to kind of learn those skills to discern what we're doing and if we're doing things right or appropriately. But at the end of the day, if you're getting the results that you want and you're having the relationship that you want with your spirits, that's all that matters. You know, don't listen to strangers. It doesn't matter. What they're doing probably won't work for you, and what you're doing probably won't work for them. So yeah, I would recommend, you know, really honing your communication skills with your spirits, really doing a lot of introspection and journaling, not necessarily like emotional journaling, but journaling of your experiences with your spirits and your communication with them, as well as the results of spell work that you've done or celebrations that you've celebrated, and kind of trying to consolidate in your mind where your boundaries and where your moral compass is pointing to in terms of respecting lineage and what you're trying to bring into your spiritual path and career and life, how much importance you put on your spirit's input. Are you more of someone who would rather get a teacher and then really do things by the book? Or are you someone who thinks they can muster the self-direction and like discipline to be their own teacher? You know, all these things are kind of going to be up to you. But I really think that the conversation around believing in yourself is very much the same as believing in your spirits, right? I think if you are constantly doubting yourself, and if you're constantly putting yourself down or ignoring your spirit's teachings in favor of someone's random thoughts or opinions and stuff like that, you're kind of disrespecting yourself and your spirits, you know, and that's not a way to have a good relationship with yourself or people around you or with entities, right? I actually was talking to someone who is in a lineage and a tradition that I really want to get into, who was telling me they can see that my spirits were probably going to ask things that are very strange from me, and that I'm going to doubt them very quickly because I am a skeptical person and I do fall prey to that kind of ideal of like, there's a way to do things, right? But they were telling me about how my spirits will probably ask me to, you know, burn crayons instead of candles, or make boats and float them down a river instead of casting a spell or doing a ritual. And I just need to trust them and to really like trust the process, which to me is bonkers. But like, I'm going to do my best because I respect those spirits and I can already see and feel their presence, you know? So it's important to respect what your spirits are asking of you. If your grandma tells you to make a recipe a certain way, and then you're kind of like, eh, I don't know, and then you follow a recipe that like your friend's grandma gave you, she will probably kind of feel like that's a little bit of a slap in the face, because like, you've been eating her food and you've been liking it, so why don't you trust her, you know? I hope that that helps answer the question a little bit. It's a very personal one, and I think everyone's answer is going to be a little bit different, but that's what it kind of boils down to me, respect towards your spirits. Our next question is from an anonymous listener, and they ask, I usually offer meat to Hecate, but I recently felt uneasy when spirits seemed to request pork while I was cooking it. How can I discern whether to fulfill such requests and identify who is asking? Discerning who is asking for what offerings is always going to be something that's really difficult if you haven't cultivated a really, really strong sense of communication with your spirits and learned to recognize their kind of spiritual signature. So I would probably recommend honing your skills in divination, or really sitting down and conjuring those spirits, making sure that you're conjuring the right spirits, and then sitting in their presence and communicating with them in a very casual, straight up manner. Even if they're not like answering or you can't perceive their answer, just like keep talking and really try to notice the little sensations in your body. Is your left rib hurting a certain way, or do you feel tingles in certain fingers, or is the room getting really, really hot and moist, or anything like that, right? I have certain spirits that manifest as almost an anxiety attack sort of feeling that feels like outside of myself, like almost overstimulation sort of vibe, even though I'm perfectly calm. Jupiter, who I've talked about a lot, manifests as like the room becomes so hot and so humid. but like the whole atmosphere in the room changes. You know, Saturn to me feels kind of like someone put like a weighted blanket on my shoulders. And so when spirits come forward and ask me for things, I can kind of discern who it is by the general feeling of it, especially if I tune in a little bit. Usually, honestly, if I'm being 100% honest, I won't feel them all the time. I'll have to kind of take like a 2 or 3 minute break from what I'm doing and just sit in the feeling and be like, okay, who is coming forward? And then I might also pray to my ancestors to help me kind of identify them a little bit better. You can also do something that I started doing recently, which is take a deck of cards and ask each of your spirits what court card they prefer to be identified as. So whether that's like the Jack of Clubs or like the Queen of Pentacles, I mean, tarot works too, but Queen of Diamonds or anything like that. And then you can kind of do a reading by shuffling the deck, trying to sit in that feeling again and like talk to who you think it might be, or talk just generally to whoever is asking you the thing, and then pull cards until you pull the first court card that shows up. And then that is the spirit that is coming through. That's something that I've been doing a lot just because my court has been expanding quite rapidly in the last couple of months. In terms of if you should fulfill those requests, you always have the right to say no. You can always tell your spirits, you know, we're not going to do that. Either you have to do something for me to get this offering, or this is an inappropriate time to ask, or it's meant for someone else, and kind of like set boundaries with your spirits in that sense. That's something that I had to learn to do specifically with my work with Saint Expedite, which I think is something that not a lot of people expect. But there are spirits that if you feed them too much without necessarily asking them to do things, or if it's not like equal give and give, it can easily transform into a situation where they will be very lazy and sit on their ass and be like, well, you give me these things anyways, so why should I go running your errands? And then you kind of have to starve them a little bit. Shake some offerings in front of them, or like tell them, hey, like you could do this thing and I'll give you this. And then when they don't, you kind of just keep pushing and pushing and being like, smells real good in the kitchen right now. You could have a piece of that meal and stuff like that, which is very like, I don't know. I think it's funny and kind of petty to like go to your spirits and waft a bottle of wine in front of them and be like, doesn't that smell great? But it does work. It works really, really well. And I think it's one of the easier methods of compulsing spirit instead of like, you know, dunking them in a bath of water or like burning their sigil or something like that, which I think is a little extreme and a little violent. But yeah, don't be afraid to set boundaries. Don't be afraid to really ask your spirits to straight up give you a sign of who it is, and then set a, not a pact or a contract, but like kind of an understanding of like, okay, well, when you come forward, please make sure that the room fills with X scent so that I know it's you. Or you can also ask your spirits in divination, how will I know that it is you coming through? And then they'll give you signs, and then you just look for those signs, and if it is, then that's that spirit coming through. And you just have to trust that it's right. There are spirits who will imitate them, but you know, that shouldn't be too much of an issue if your spirits are fed, and if your protections are strong, and if your psychic abilities are honed. So thank you for your question. Nimue asks, is it possible that one spouse can drive away their spirits? This is, I think, a very context-dependent question, so I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to answer it in a way that is specific to your situation, Nimue, but I do believe that someone's presence can absolutely make your own spirits take the side or, like, get on the back burner or something. Especially when, like, strong personalities are involved, or if the other person's a practitioner, or if they're, like, very... like, if they're ganged up. Like, there are people who, even if they're not, like, spiritual, even if they're not religious or anything, just have, like, wild spirits around them, either because of birth things or because of family stuff or because of ancestry. You know, some people's ancestors are just very, very militant on their behalf and are like, my descendant can do no wrong. We're putting all of our eggs in one basket for this one person. No one else in the family is blessed like they are. We are taking care of their business left and right. And in cases like that, if your own spiritual core is a little bit shaky, or if their spirits are like the kind of spirit that has authority over the spirits that you work with, that can kind of create issues. There's also cases, especially when like ancestors and like the dead get involved, where like if your dead grandmother does not like your boyfriend, she will try to get him out of your life, or she will fuck off. Like, they are people, you know? If your significant other comes into your space and in your shrine room and like mixes shit around and takes down shrines, or is just like kind of messing with your stuff, and you let them, and you kind of like defer your authority to them, then the spirits in your house and in your home will kind of like, well, we listen to you, sure, but you listen to him, so he's also our boss. You know, you have to kind of set your foot down and be like, no, like, you guys work for me. You guys are my ancestors. You guys are pacted with me. I'm the one who feeds you. I'm the one who gets you your stuff. You know, you have to listen to me and you can't listen to them. If your partner is a practitioner and they're actively doing stuff to kind of push your spirits away, I personally consider that to be pretty toxic, pretty shady. In the same way that, like, if your partner is pushing your friends away or trying to put distance between you and your family and stuff like that, like, that's just not, that's a big old fucking red flag. So if someone's doing that with your spirits, they gotta go. They've got to go. In terms of things you can do to probably make that a little bit easier, like the situation in general, you can feed your spirits more often. You can reinstate your authority with them. You can rehash pacts. You can also take your partner, if they're willing, and like have them like invite the spirits themselves back to your space. Especially like in the context of like a house spirit or ancestors or stuff like that, having your partner make offerings to those spirits and being like, no, like, I want you here, and communicating with them and stuff can really make that easier. You can also try to find ways to make your spirits more welcome in your space. Like, you can create pots for them or boxes or like spirit homes and stuff like that. You can get herbs that are sacred to them or talismans that they really like and kind of hang them around the space to solidify their influence there. You know, all of those things. There's also the possibility that maybe if your protections are kind of running low and then this new person comes in with their kind of crew and all that, it just messes things up. In which case, I would recommend kind of upping the protections, cleansing, and just making a big feast offering to everybody. And then you guys also have some, just so that everyone knows you're a household. You're all supposed to get along. Everyone's supposed to have a good time. There is also the fact that any sort of spiritual situation is going to shift a little bit in hierarchy as people move in and out of the house. Your spirits and their spirits might not get along, or one of them might feel like they're entitled to more attention or entitled to more authority, and then that can kind of create problems between them that you aren't necessarily aware of. I've actually had a situation that's very similar to that moving into the place where I'm living right now, because I'm living with family, and so things were a little bit busy in the spiritual sense because of spirits that didn't necessarily get along. Certain spirits coming forward and being very demanding with offerings and with wanting certain attention that I wasn't giving them because I was tending to my own spirits. So that's a bunch of stuff to keep in mind, right? I would really recommend, if you're worried about your spirits leaving or your spirits kind of taking a back seat, maybe performing some divination either yourself or having someone else perform divination on your behalf, contacting someone who can do mediumship on your behalf to really have like a clearer communication with them. Our next question comes from a carnivorous trickster, and they ask, what is your opinion on summoning demons non-ceremonially? There is precedent with Astaroth, and in consorting with spirits, Miller has a different method for it. I personally don't think that you should be summoning demons. I think I've talked about this in the past. If you are going to be doing it, I highly recommend doing the full ceremonial getup, because there is like a need for protection and there is a need for making sure that you don't get eaten alive. You know, demons aren't necessarily like Christian devils necessarily, but they are classified as spirits who will enter your mind and kind of manipulate you into doing what they want and kind of put you in this like sweet sort of agony where you're so confused and so convinced that what you're doing isn't dangerous that it ends up being dangerous. Especially like Astaroth is a really, really difficult one. I think that Miller's inclusion of them in consorting with spirits was very irresponsible, personally. That is why I don't recommend that book. Just because, you know, do things right or don't do them at all, at least in that context. There's plenty of space for experimentation after you've kind of done the initial big rituals by asking them how to conjure them in easier ways, or by getting them to grant you a familiar, or asking them for sigils that you can employ to call on their energies, anything like that. But to get there, I do recommend the traditional method. Our next question comes from Connor, and they ask, I love hearing about what inspires people and how they set up and work with an altar. What are the things you think about, and what are your must-haves? Honestly, I'm not a super crazy altar person in terms of like, my altars are very, very straightforward and very, very plain and basic and boring. They just kind of get out of control because I am a magpie and I collect and grab everything that I see. Spirits also ask for a lot of things, so it kind of like builds out from there. I think every single altar that I've ever had has started out as straight up something to represent the spirit, a glass of water, a candle, a platter for offerings, and then any materia that I use with them in their, like, devotion. So, like, I have, like, a Spica shrine, and so on my Spica shrine, I have Fixar Spica oil and tincture and incense and a couple of talismans pertaining to Spica and stuff like that. But apart from that, you know, I have a green candle under which I place petitions. I have a little tray for food offerings and stuff like that. I have a couple of talismans that I made for Spica over the years, and that's it. Like, nothing fancy. But then I've also got my expedite altar that I've had for many years. And now, like, I'm looking at it right now and I can count 7 oil bottles, 2 powders, a bunch of rosaries, like a pile of medals and coins, a bullet, a lodestone and a gator paw, and open roads talisman, and some palms, coffee and water, stuff like that. You know, like, there's just so much on there right now. There's, like, a skull at his feet and stuff, because over the years, like, he's asked me for certain things, and I've had certain dreams, and I've had certain ideas, and I've had exchanges with other practitioners that have told me what they included on their altar that I thought was interesting, so I kind of built it out from there. But to me, it is, like, very natural. I'm not someone who will go and purchase things before I set up an altar to be like, oh, this would look so good on their altar. Like, I'm going to do that. Like, everyone gets plain basics, and then we will build out from there. I think gifts to spirits can be very, very powerful. I am not someone who likes to spoil their spirits, just because I don't like spoiling myself. So, like, I'm kind of, I have a minimalist mindset and that kind of thing. I try not to collect things that I don't need or things that are extra. And I like things to be very simple and pure and just straightforward, easy to work, easy peasy lemon squeezy. Nothing complicated. Everything should be very, very utilitarian, because I have working altars. That's the thing. I think that if I was someone who had very strong, like, veneration or devotion kind of interests, I would probably make my shrines a little bit nicer, just to, you know, venerate and devote myself to that spirit. But my shrines are very, like, working shrines. There's spells everywhere, and there's stuff everywhere, and there's things for clients. There's tons of petitions everywhere, tons of candles that are, like, fixed and loaded for stuff. There's oils brewing on stuff. It's very utilitarian. And so I think just start with just plain old light and water representation. Sometimes a candle can be the representation. If you get, like, a 7-day candle and it has, like, an image of the saint or of the spirit or anything, that works. I like statues. I like effigies. Also, like, a printed photo in a nice frame. Easy. And then, yeah, I just build out from there over the years. Our very last question of the day comes from Marquise, and they ask, where could I find further reading on working with the stars? I know of your blog, and that's it. I would love to add to the amazing repertoire you have already given us. Thank you for everything. First of all, thank you very much. That is very kind. That honestly does touch my heart. I try to provide as much as I possibly can. And to be honest, I have not found too many resources that I'm very passionate about regarding the fixed stars. I think just because it's more of an academic interest than it is, like, a practical interest for a lot of people. And as such, there isn't a lot of, like, practical material on them. You kind of have to extrapolate and work with the spirits one-on-one to really get your stuff going, at least in my experience. But some creators that I really enjoy that have worked with fixed stars and that I really enjoy include Sasha Ravitch, Caitlin Kopic over at Sphere and Sundry is kind of the OG on the fixed star materia in the witchcraft sphere right now. There are lots of folks that do a lot of star stuff but don't really talk about it. I first remember encountering fixed star stuff over on Wolf and Goat by Jesse Hathaway Diaz. I think Rose Aurora's recently did a fixed star lecture for the Salem Spring Agora event, which I hear was extremely good. I have not had the chance to listen to it yet. For me personally, what helped the most was really going to, like, scholarly articles on stuff like that. I found a lot of really, really good resources, or papers rather, on the stars and on astronyms and folklore concerning the constellations, looking into various ethnographies. Right now, I am really, really enjoying a couple of papers on Belarusian star lore as well as Russian star lore. Scholar.google.com, you look up folklore of stars, or you look up astronyms or beliefs concerning celestial bodies and stuff like that, and you'll find tons of stuff. There's a lot and a lot and a lot of papers written about it, just because the stars are, like, old as hell and there's so much stuff written about them, just not really accessible in a practical context. You're very unlikely to find stuff that's going to be, like, spells with the fixed stars or how to venerate Spica or stuff like that. I think there's more and more of that coming out, with a lot more creators kind of putting emphasis on the stars and talking about the stars and kind of taking them out of the shadows a little bit, but it is a very young subject in the occult sphere at this time, so I would definitely recommend delving more into academic resources. So that about does it for our advice column episode, and I hope that I was able to answer all of the questions relatively succinctly, in ways that really provide you guys with a few pointers on where to go and what to do. If you are interested in listening to our Almanac episode, you can do so over on Patreon. It will be released at the same time as this episode is released. So if you are listening, it is up and it is available to patrons of the Leaf tier and Hawthorne tier at this time. Make sure to also check out Kitchen Toad and all of the beautiful products that I recently released. I'm very, very proud of this launch, and it will be my last launch for quite a little while, just because I have some big things coming up, including a few trips and a relocation and a whole new life to get into. So if you guys want to check that out, I would be really appreciative of it. And don't forget to tune in April as well for our next episode that is concerning all things ceremonial magic versus low magic. Once again, I am Mahigan, the host of the Sat Upon a Toadstool podcast, and it was such a pleasure to have you. I hope that you'll join me again for some nice conversation. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact me, you can do so through Instagram at @kitchentoad or through my website, kitchentoad.com.